I've been wanting to do a sermon on the topic of Jesus for many years, actually, but it wasn't until I heard a comment from a newer member that she wanted to hear more modern music in church and not just hymns that I was actually inspired to begin the process of writing the sermon and picking the music from Jesus Christ Superstar to accompany it. It might seem strange nowadays to have a sermon with Jesus as the main topic when his name is rarely, if ever, mentioned in UU churches. But as you may be aware, Unitarian churches in this country evolved from Christian churches in the late 1700s and 1800s, the main point of separation being a lack of belief in the divinity of Jesus, and hence a rejection of the concept of the Trinity, which is a belief in three gods in one, the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit. The non-believers came to be called non-Unitarians because they believed in the unity of God and not the Trinity. As time progressed, even the belief of God the Father has practically disappeared from most UU churches. But just because Unitarians no longer believe in the divinity of Jesus doesn't mean we have to ignore or reject his teachings. I was raised a Catholic and was a devout believer for the first 26 years of my life. I've read the four Gospels and the Acts of Apostles in their entirety, and even did critical study of them in theology classes while a student at the University of Notre Dame. I always admired the powerful yet simple nature of his message, often told in parables. My conversion to Unitarianism came about primarily because of my older brother, who was studying at Harvard Divinity School and is now a UU minister. He had begun to question his Catholic faith, and when I made a trip back to Boston for the sad occasion of attending the funeral of our father, who had died rather suddenly, we had intense discussions on the divinity of Jesus. He gave me a book to read on the flight back to California called The Myth of the God Incarnate. As I read the chapters of this book while in an emotionally charged state, my faith slowly started to peel away. I like to tell people that I got on the plane a Catholic and got off a Unitarian. But despite the fact I lost my belief in the divinity of Jesus, the power of his message and the ability of it to reach inside and inspire me remained. I continued to try to my best to live out the golden rule and to love my neighbor as myself, as Jesus had requested. Now, I wasn't aware of the seven UU principles at the time, but when I did see them, it became apparent to me that they were almost completely compatible with the message of Jesus. So let me share with you some examples of how his teaching is compatible with our principles, which appear in the back of your order of service, in case you need a little refresher. Starting with UU principle number one, the inherent worth and dignity of every person. There are many examples to choose from, but I chose his attitude towards lepers. Leprosy is very rare now, but at the time of Jesus, it was fairly common and considered a sort of curse from God. As the Jews were concerned that the condition was contagious, such individuals had to live separated from others on the outskirts of towns. Ostracized from the community, they were left homeless without the support structure of family and friends. The evangelist Mark tells this story of Jesus encountering the lepers. A leper came to him, beseeching him, and kneeling said to him, "If you will, you can make me clean." Moved with pity, Jesus stretched out his hand and touched him and said to him, "I will, be clean." And immediately the leprosy left him and he was made clean. In approaching Jesus, the man was in violation of Jewish law. And in touching the leper, Jesus also defies Jewish law. He'd also defied Jewish law and norms many times in the way he associates with tax collectors, prostitutes, and the like, all in his desire to show that everyone deserves to be treated with respect. UU principle number two, justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. Once again, there are numerous situations where Jesus practices equity and compassion, but my favorite is a story in John. The scribes and the Pharisees brought a woman who had been caught in adultery, and placing her in their midst, they said to him, "Teacher, this woman has been caught in the act of adultery." Now, in the law, Moses commanded us to stone such. What do you say about her? This they said to test him, that they might have some charge to bring against him. Jesus bent down and wrote with his finger on the ground. As they continued to ask him, he stood up and said to them, "Let him who is without sin among you be the first to throw a stone at her." And once more he bent down and wrote with his finger on the ground. But when they heard it, they went away one by one, beginning with the eldest. And Jesus was left alone with the woman standing before him. Jesus looked up and said to her, "Woman, where are they? Has no one condemned you?" She said, "No one, Lord." And Jesus said, "Neither do I condemn you. Go and do not sin again." UU principle number 3, acceptance of one another and encouragement to spiritual growth in our congregations. Jesus was very compassionate and supportive towards his disciples, whom he picked from all sorts of occupations, and he needed to constantly provide moral support to them when they ran into difficulties, whether it be from large crowds that often surrounded them or doubts about their mission and how it would end. I think John summed it up pretty well when he quotes Jesus as saying, "A new command I give you, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this, everyone will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another." UU principle number 4, a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. Jesus was raised a Jew, and so is very familiar with all the Jewish requirements for living a devout life, such as keeping the Sabbath holy by not working on it, and not eating certain types of food. But Jesus didn't want people to think that living a devout life is simply a matter of following a long list of rules and regulations. To stress this, Matthew tells a story about how Jesus downplayed the significance of restrictions about not eating certain foods. Jesus called the crowd to him and said, "Listen and understand. What goes into someone's mouth does not defile them, but what comes out of their mouth, this is what defiles them." Then the disciples came to him and said, "Do you know that the Pharisees were offended when they heard this?" "Leave them. They are blind guides," Jesus said. "If the blind lead the blind, both will fall into a pit." Peter said, "Explain the parable to us." "Are you still so dull?" Jesus asked them. "Don't you see that whatever enters the mouth goes into the stomach and then out of the body? But the things that come out of a person's mouth come from the heart, and these defile them. For out of the heart comes evil thoughts, murder, adultery, sexual immorality, theft, false testimony, slander. These are what defile a person, but eating with unwashed hands does not defile them." As for our fifth principle, the right of conscience and the use of the democratic process within our congregations and in society at large, I had a hard time finding any biblical verse that was consistent with this. Democracy was, of course, relatively new at the time, having only been invented by the Greeks a few hundred years earlier. When I searched the entire New Testament online for any occurrence of the word vote, the only hit I got was when Paul talked about he had voted to put to death early Christians before his conversion to Christianity. And when I searched for the word democratic, I didn't get any hits. So let's just say that during the time of the domination of Western world by the autocratic Roman Empire, democracy was not in favor. Now, UU principle number 6, the goal of world community with peace, liberty, and justice for all. I think one of the most famous speeches given by Jesus is the one called the Sermon on the Mount. The blessings he gives in the sermon have actually been given their own name. They're called the Beatitudes. As related by Matthew, here's a sample of some of them, particularly the ones that support our sixth principle. "Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, for they will be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they will be shown mercy. Blessed are the poor in heart, for they will see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they will be called children of God. Blessed are those who are persecuted because of righteousness, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven." Lastly, UU principle number 7, respect for the interdependent web of all existence for which we are a part. Jesus didn't spend too much time commenting on the beauty of nature in the animal kingdom, possibly because he was traveling around in a dry and dusty place. And in this era, people were dependent on animals for transportation, working in the field, providing food and clothing, and not as much for providing human companionship. But I did find this reference in Luke to what Jesus thought about the beauty of flowers. "Consider how the lilies grow. They do not labor or spin, Yet I tell you, not even Solomon in all his glory was adorned like one of these. If that is how God clothes the grass of the field, which is here today and tomorrow is thrown into the furnace, how much more will he clothe you? Besides the seven UU principles, UUs also uphold the living tradition, which draws from many sources, and these are also listed on the back of your order service. Among these are words and deeds of prophetic men and women, which challenge us to confront powers and structures of evil with justice, compassion, and the transforming power of love. Wisdom from the world's religions, which inspires us in our ethical and spiritual life. Jewish and Christian teachings, which call us to respond to God's love by loving our neighbor as ourselves. So I wanted to close with one more parable that I think epitomizes how the teaching of Jesus aptly fits into our living tradition. It's the classic story of the Good Samaritan. Many hospitals and charitable organizations today are named after the Good Samaritan in this parable. For those of you that don't know, a Samaritan was someone from Samaria, a region in Palestine where the Jews had strayed from the standard interpretation of the Bible and were consequently looked down upon by the more Orthodox Jews. In our time, a comparable analogy would be to substitute the word Samaritan with the word Muslim. In the story told by Luke, a lawyer asked Jesus what he should do to inherit eternal life. Jesus said to him, "What is written in the law?" And the lawyer answered, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul, with all your strength and with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself." And Jesus said to him, "You have answered right. Do this, and you will live." But the lawyer, desiring to justify himself, said to Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" Jesus replied, "A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho, and he fell among robbers, who stripped him and beat him, and departed, leaving him half dead. Now by chance, a priest was going down that road, and when he saw him, he passed by on the other side. So likewise, a Levite, who was a member of the priestly tribe of Jews, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, so like I said, think Muslim, as he journeyed, came to where he was, and when he saw him, he had compassion, and he went to him and bound up his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he set him on his own beast and brought him to an inn and took care of him. And the next day he took out 2 denarii, which is about 2 days' wages, and gave them to the innkeeper, saying, 'Take care of him, and whatever more you spend, I will repay you when I come back.' Which of these three do you think proved neighbor to the man who fell among the robbers?" Jesus asked. The lawyer said, "The one who showed him mercy." And Jesus said to him, "Go and do likewise." So in conclusion, I hope I've succeeded in demonstrating to you that the message of Jesus is quite consistent with UU philosophy. It was only after he died that the meaning of his message was slowly altered, and this misinterpretation culminated at the Council of Nicaea in 325 AD, when he was made the Son of God and became part of the Trinity at the insistence of the Roman Emperor Constantine, who was presiding over the council. But I'm convinced that if Jesus were alive today, he'd be happily standing amongst us on the side of love, proudly wearing a bright yellow t-shirt. Thanks, folks.